Moving to the fifth order, business reports of committee. House Secretary will read the report. The report of committee, reports of committee is printed in the agenda on House File 322, and pursuant to Joint Rule 2.03, the bill was referred to the Committee on Rules and Administration as a late bill. Moving to the eighth order of business, introduction and first reading of Senate bills. There are several printed on today's Senate bill introduction. They will be referred as indicated first reading. Moving to the ninth order of business, motions and resolutions. There are several Senate resolutions printed on today's Senate agenda that will be referred to the Rules Committee. Meaning under motions and resolutions, we will take up several conference committee reports. Secretary will read the report. Senate File 1717, Senator Miller.
Thank you, Madam President. I move that foregoing recommendations in the conference committee report to Senate File 1717 now be adopted, and that the bill be repassed as amended by the conference committee.
To that motion, Senator Miller.
Thank you, Madam President. The conference committee report for Senate File 1717, there are two articles in this conference committee report. Article 1 is a technical housekeeping language from the Department of Labor and Industry. Article 2 includes modifications of the independent contractors provision. Also included in this conference committee report is the sprinkler language that has been thoroughly discussed both last session and this session. All three of the provisions have passed both chambers with strong bipartisan support. As a compromise with the opponents of the sprinkler issue, we included provision 1 in Article 1, Section 18, that says, before entering into an agreement on a new single-family dwelling, a contractor shall offer a prospective customer the option to install sprinklers, any fire sprinkler system components, or automatic fire extinguishing equipment or devices. I'd also like to thank Senator Tomasoni and Senator Michelle for being on the conference committee.
Further discussion on Senator Miller's motion. Seeing none, Senator Miller renews his motion that the foregoing recommendations and conference committee report on Senate File 1717 be now adopted, and that the bill be repassed as amended by the conference committee. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Secretary will give Senate File 1717 its third reading.
Senate File Number 1717, a bill for an act relating to labor and industry, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 1717. All those senators having voted who desire to vote? Secretary will close the roll. There being 48 ayes and 17 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Remaining under motions and resolutions, we will take up the conference committee report on Senate File 506. Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam President. I move that the foregoing recommendations and conference committee report on Senate File 506 be now adopted and that the bill be repassed as amended by the conference committee.
To that motion, Senator Ortman.
Thank you, members. You'll recall that we had a conference committee report before that talked about the conciliation court levels being moved from the current jurisdictional amount of $7,500 to $10,000 effective this year until 2014, and then going up to $15,000 in 2014. The provision that we thought the governor had agreed to, but were misunderstanding his position, that has been taken out. And so I believe this bill is non-controversial. I hope to have everyone's support for increasing the conciliation court levels so that Minnesotans have swift access to justice at a much more reasonable cost and allow us to resolve many of these disputes without having to resort to district court litigation and all the costs and time and burden that's involved in that. Members, I hope you'll support this conference committee report.
Senator Latz.
Madam President, members, I join Senator Ortman in encouraging your support for this bill. Two important points. One is, from a consumer protection standpoint, it retains the $4,000 limit on jurisdiction for actions, collection actions relating to consumer credit transactions. And secondly, and always important to remember that even in in any conciliation court case, if either party is not satisfied with the results in conciliation court, they have a right to appeal to the district court for basically a do-over, but with the full procedural protections in district court. So I think this is a good move, and I appreciate your support for it.
Further discussion on Senator Ortman's motion? Seeing none, Senator Ortman renews her motion that the foregoing recommendations and conference committee report on Senate File 506 be now adopted and that the bill be repassed as amended by the conference committee. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Secretary will give Senate File 506 its third reading.
Senate File number 506, a bill for an act relating to courts. Third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 506. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 66 ayes and no nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Remaining under motions and resolutions, we will take up messages from the House. Secretary will report the message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce that the House has adopted the recommendation report of the conference committee in House File number 2337 and repassed said bill in accordance with the report of the committee. So adopted, House File 2337, a bill for an act relating to the financing of state and local government. House File 2337 is herewith transmitted to the Senate. Albany Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam President. I move that the foregoing recommendations and conference committee report on House File 2337 be now adopted and that the bill be repassed as amended by the conference committee.
To that motion, Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam President and members. How many times have you been asked by members of your business community or homeowners in the state of Minnesota for your help. Has anyone here in this chamber been asked for help given the current economic situation? Members, we know that there are businesses across the state and families that are on economic life support because of the economic recession. And today's bill represents, for the first time that I can remember, as long as I've been here, a bill that would provide immediate relief to our small business owners and to our property taxpayers that are struggling through the economic recession. Immediate relief at the legislature and at the state capitol is very hard to come by, but there is immediate relief in this bill. I believe the Tax Conference Committee, made up of members of the House and the Senate, have carried forward our priorities throughout this legislative session to provide this immediate relief to the small businesses and the property taxpayers. So there will be a big difference for those folks that need our relief beginning on July 1. Members, we'll adjourn here in a couple of days, and if we pass this bill and the governor signs it into law, help will be on the way in a matter of weeks. Not months, not years, weeks. And we can have economic activity, a surge of it, beginning on July 1. And so I ask you to assist me in providing that kind of immediate relief on July 1, 2012. And let me explain how this bill will create that surge of economic activity on that day. One of the most important provisions in this bill is a tax exemption for the investment in upfront equipment. Members, Minnesota has a policy that small business owners and large business owners should be able to purchase capital equipment without paying a sales tax. But under current practices, they now must apply for a rebate. They must pay that sales tax at the time of purchase. This bill would change that so that our job creators and small business owners would be able to invest in capital equipment on July 1 and not have to pay that sales tax. And for if you have a $100,000 purchase of equipment, that's a lot of sales tax. This equipment can be very expensive, and the sales tax rebate program has become a disincentive to investment. But just think for a moment about what that surge will be. If one Minnesota business decides to buy capital equipment, they're not only making that decision for themselves because they will be more productive, but the business that they buy that equipment from then has more economic activity. And so that's how we can be certain that if we authorize this legislation with the July 1 enactment date, small businesses across the state and those that manufacture capital equipment will all be benefited. It will be immediate relief. And members, this bill also makes that capital upfront equipment at point of sale exemption for all Minnesota businesses by 2016. And I know for a fact, having been here as long as I have, that this is a bipartisan goal. Every time I've been hearing in the Tax Committee, I have heard bipartisan support for the repeal of the capital upfront equipment rebate program. So this bill does that. In addition, members, remember I said immediate relief? Well, it's immediate relief for small business owners, but it's also immediate relief for our homeowners who have seen increases in property taxes. And that has happened across the entire state. And if it has, members, the state of Minnesota will provide 90% of the increase over $100 and over 12%. 90% of that increase will be refunded this year. So our property taxpayers, if they have seen an increase, they will get a refund, and they will get it in 2012. That is immediate relief, members. And so this bill is very important. In fact, I would say it is urgent. This relief is urgently needed by Minnesota small businesses and property taxpayers. But there's more relief in here as well. In addition, for all of our small business owners across the state, they might be in War Road, They might be in Woodbury, in Watertown, Winona, Moorhead, Minneapolis. Every business, small or large, that has a physical presence in the state of Minnesota, whether they're making money or losing money, would see relief in this bill from their property taxes with the elimination of the inflator on the state general levy. And members, what we would be doing is freezing the current collections at the current level of $817 million. Members, that has become a very big burden for our businesses across the state. It is now represents 30% of their property taxes are paid to the state general levy. That is over and above what they currently pay in local taxes. They are local taxing partners. They pay city council, taxes, county taxes, metropolitan council taxes, school district taxes. They pay them. And they pay a state general levy on top of that, representing 30% of their taxes. Now, I'd like to say that we could eliminate that altogether, but I know we can't do this in this economic climate. So the tax conferees agreed that we would eliminate the inflator and we would freeze business property taxes, the collections, at $817 million. Members, this bill represents tens of thousands of new jobs, more than the Viking Stadium proposal, more than any bonding proposal that I've seen, tens of thousands of jobs represented in this bill. Because we would be authorizing phase two of the Mall of America. We would be authorizing another Bloomington district, TIF district, for expansion. There's economic development that has been asked for by many of our cities across the state. And members, I have provided you with a list of those cities that have been asking for this relief. The letter dated April 24th from the League of Minnesota Cities should have been passed out on your desk. Members, this bill creates certainty for our businesses and individuals and property taxpayers across the state. It has huge benefits, and they are immediate. And so I ask you for your support for this very important legislation.
Further discussion of Senator Ortman's motion. Seeing none, Senator Ortman renews her motion that the foregoing recommendations and conference committee reports on House File 2337 be now adopted and the bill be repassed as amended by the conference committee. On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senator Marty.
Madam President, on the conference committee report, I wanted to raise two particular concerns, one of which is the business property tax relief, as you call it. You know, if you look at what's happened to homeowners and renters and farmers and everybody else, their property taxes have been going up very quickly in the last number of years. Last year's bill made it much worse with the elimination of homestead credit. You're trying to make a few little changes here, but bottom line is that's not going to bring down any of those huge increases. We're giving businesses who got a good break in the 2001 bill when they got this statewide business property tax. It was set up so it wouldn't go up as fast as other property taxes did. So more and more of the property tax burden is going to homeowners and renters and farmers and others. And in this bill, all the relief is going to those businesses. And frankly, you're doing it not by paying for it some other way. You're doing it by adding to the problems for the budget next year. It's not a balanced bill there. You do know you have tails in the bill. So if we're going to provide property tax relief, it's about time we undo some of the tax increases that you passed last year on homeowners and renters rather than on the businesses. They can have their fair share too, but not when we don't do a thing to help the renters and homeowners. And the other concern I want to mention was the same thing. This was I think Senator Nelson provision the other day on the floor, in which she was talking about the angel investment credit in there, and I believe you still have the same provisions in here right now. And that is that if these angel investors, and they're not angels because they're angelic people, they're angels because people who want the money, they are looking for people who have the money to loan them. These are very wealthy investors, and they're taking high risk on this because there's a huge payback when they win on an investment. And in this, you're increasing it to 40%, a 40% tax credit for those handful of people. You or I couldn't qualify for this. You have to be qualified, certified to be an angel investor by the state before you can make these investments. Typically $100,000 type investments. Not the kind of thing most people could think of doing, and they get a 40% tax break on it. Senator Rosen, when she was defending this before the amendment was withdrawn the other day, was saying, no, that that's not true, but the language in the bill is that. It is, if these are investments in greater Minnesota, for every $100, every $100,000, let's say you invest, the taxpayers are going to give you a credit of $40,000 for that. On top of the investment earnings, I think that's excessive. The people at the top end are getting all the tax breaks, all the tax credits in here, and the bill is not balanced. It's going to make our budget more difficult next year. It does nothing to pay back the school shift. It's taking money from that for the business tax credit, for the business property tax cut. I urge members to oppose the bill. I think the House called it a smoking hot tax bill. I hope the governor's got a smoking hot veto pen ready for it.
Senator Scoy? I wasn't sure this time if you were just waving at the people in the gallery or at me, but Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Madam President. And I would like to follow along with Senator Marty and ask you not to support this conference committee report. When the Senate tax bill left, was $190 million of deficit spending in the next biennium. Senator Ortman, you did make a small amount of progress in reducing that. It's only 150 some million of deficit spending now. And members, as if there's anything we've learned, we shouldn't be spending money that we do not have. And for us to continue to have the deficit spending just defies any definition of fiscal conservatism that there is. And if you take this inflator provision and carry it out over the timeline that was in the bill as introduced, it's over $2.3 billion that's added to the deficit. And so I think we should not be spending money that we do not have. I would ask you to show some fiscal discipline. Let's have some fiscal responsibility. And let's not do this deficit spending. I ask you to vote no.
Senator Michelle.
Thank you, Madam President, members, and thank you, Senator Ortman. Members, I think this might be the best piece of legislation that we've brought to the floor this year. This gives us an opportunity not just to talk about jobs, but to talk about growth, growing Minnesota's economy. You know, so often the debates here at the Capitol and on the Senate floor come down to taxes and spending. And so what I appreciate is we've added a third topic with this bill, and that's growth. How do you grow this economy? How do you grow private sector jobs? Well, this is how you do it. This is how you do it. This bill is how you do it. This helps to plant a flag at our borders that Minnesota is open for business, that Minnesota is the best place to start and grow a business. And it recognizes we are a high-cost state. We are a high-tax state. And there's something we can do to make it a little more attractive to grow a business, to move a family here. Something we can do to make this place a little more attractive to someone with a good idea. Yes, Senator Marty, an angel investor, someone who's ready to take a risk, someone who's ready at the end of this recession, at this tough recession, to now take a risk and try to grow something and try to grow jobs. So that's what this bill helps to do. This is absolutely a jobs bill. I frankly wish it could go farther. I wish it could go farther. I wish we could attack our third highest business income tax. But taking a run at the statewide business property tax is a great way to provide relief to job creators of all sizes. Of all sizes, whether they've made it through the recession with flying colors or whether they're hurting, we're going to provide some relief to them with this bill. And I think the angel tax provisions are worth at least a moment. Again, how are we going to get this economy growing in this 21st century global competition? We have to make Minnesota the best place to grow an idea. And that's what these angel tax provisions do. And we're going to grow them all over the state, thanks to Senator Nelson and Senator Rosen and Senator Ortman. If you have a good idea, we want you to come here. We want you to move your business here. We want you to move your family here. We need to do some things that allow people and job creators to choose Minnesota. And that's what this bill does today. Urge a green vote.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Madam President. And to Senator Michelle, to your point that this is the best bill that's been on the Senate floor this year, if this bill that we have that spends money that we do not have is the best bill we've had, it shows how truly low of a bar that would be, because this can't be said to be the best.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam President. Just a couple of facts about the angel investor tax credit that members need to know. The provision that Senator Marty was speaking of simply has to do with the allocation or the use of those tax credits. Currently, 13% members of the businesses are in outstate Minnesota. The rest of those businesses are concentrated in the 7-county metro area. We would not accept that kind of disparity in any other statewide program, whether it be health disparities or the achievement gap in education or housing disparities. This is simply encouraging more of that development in outstate Minnesota. It's about jobs for the entire state of Minnesota.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam President. It appears that this body needs a history lesson, and I think that's in order right now, and I'm going to remind the body of some numbers. In 2008, after budget talks were ended, there was a $950 million budget deficit in the tails. In 2009, $3.1 billion in the tails. And at the end of the 2010 budget talks, there were $5.77 billion in the tails. This is a responsible tax bill. Our job here is to leave money in the hands of the entrepreneurs. The entrepreneurs will be who grow jobs, will put our people back to work, will empower our private sector to do the things that the private sector does best. So members, I encourage a green vote on this bill.
Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, and I think we should be aware of what we do for business property tax holders. When we look at that, I remember seeing in the news that there was discussion that we were eliminating business property taxes. Well, we're not doing that, members, even in this small step. Just for a reminder, if you own a business and you have property, you are already paying locally 1.5 to 2 times as much as a resident of a similar value home. So that's already in there. But in addition to that, the state takes another 30% above that. So we're simply saying we should freeze the amount the state takes moving forward. So, and then the other thing I thought we should at least have a brief discussion about is why we're doing this now. Well, keep in mind, we turned around a over $5 billion budget shortfall into over a $1.2 billion surplus, and the new numbers coming forward seem to indicate that we have another $100 million perhaps there. And so we want to use a little bit of that, number one, to help small and mid-sized businesses, but number two, I thank Senator Ortman for also addressing property taxes, that we get additional money towards property tax refunds to those homeowners whose taxes went up $100 or more.
I have Senator Carlson next.
Thank you, Madam President, and thank you, Senator Ortman, for this tax bill. I want to remind members that businesses work best when they work in certainty. And when there's uncertainty in the tax code, when there's uncertainty in regulations, businesses have a hard time prospering. But so, too, do cities. Members, our cities are looking for certainty as well. Our cities are looking to us and saying, what are you going to do with our LGA? Are you going to cut us? Are you going to increase us? What are you going to do? Our cities are begging for us, members, to have certainty in their LGA. And this bill delivers certainty in their LGA. And members, if you've talked to your cities at all, they will tell you, I've talked to the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, and they will tell you, we need this provision. Section 11 of the bill, members, will deliver what your cities are asking for. Thank you.
Senator Chamberlain.
Madam President, members, to Marty, Senator Marty's comments, just veto this bill. Just get rid of this bill. Don't pass it. That's the comment. This is so much more than one item. There are TIFs in here to help local communities redevelop their gravel pits, to create jobs, extension of TIFs, to continue their work on development in their local communities, veterans' preferences in here, tax, individual homeowners and property taxpayers, relief for them in here. So the idea we should just throw this away because whatever it is they dislike in here would be simply irresponsible. There are a lot of things in this bill that will impact a lot of people, from single homeowners up to from small businesses, sole proprietorships, up to large corporations, job creators, including people who own homes in border cities who suffer disparity because of our property tax system and other issues that the neighboring states don't have. So I urge a green vote. Thank you.
Senator Marty.
Madam President, Senator Chamberlain, if you undid half of the tax increases you passed on renters and homeowners last year, you might be starting to talk about it, but you're not touching that. You're simply giving more tax breaks, very heavy number of tax breaks to some of the largest businesses in the state, and I don't have an objection to doing that if you're going to pay for it and you're not going to take it out of other things like homeowners and renters, which we did last year in your bill. And I want to get back one more. Senator Michelle said this would grow jobs. I think the one thing it will grow is the bank accounts of some of those angel investors. Under the bill, you don't have to worry. Nobody's going to make too much. The most any angel investor can make under this thing is $250,000 in tax credits under this bill. And it's going to be a 40% tax credit. Senator Nelson, if your goal is to spread it out around the state, cut it back for the metro area. Don't increase it to 40%. Under this proposal, a wealthy couple could invest $625,000 in one of these businesses in greater Minnesota. They'd get a $250,000 tax credit. Plus, they get the money they've invested in their earnings on their investment. This will grow bank accounts for the wealthy. It will not grow jobs.
Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Madam President. Before I make my comment, I would like to ask Senator Ortman if she will yield.
Senator Ortman will yield. Senator Torres Ray.
Senator Ortman, I have a question about Section 4. I want to make sure that I understand that section correctly. If I read this section correctly, I understand that the refund on sales taxes paid on capital equipment will go to all businesses after we pass this bill. That is different from prior years where we have this provision available only to companies or businesses that have 80 or fewer full-time employees or made an equivalent of $1 million a year. Am I correct?
Senator Ortman.
Senator Torres Ray, I think that's a very good question because it may appear a little bit more complicated than it should. Under current law, all Minnesota businesses are technically exempt from paying sales taxes at the time of for a purchase of capital equipment, but the state law requires that they apply for a rebate for those sales taxes. So we say we intend that there be no sales taxes, but they actually pay it at the time of sale and they apply for a rebate, which is a very complicated process. And so in the Senate Tax Committee, we've talked for many years about moving that so that there's an at point of sale exemption, so they don't actually have to write the check for the sales tax. And what this bill would do is phase that in by making it a sales tax exemption at the point of sale for all Minnesota businesses that have 80 employers or less and have those thresholds for revenue. So we just start with those small companies, and by 2016, all of them will be exempt from sales tax at the point of sale, no rebate program. So that's what we're really doing, is eliminating the rebate program in two steps here.
Madam President.
Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Orman, so the provision that sells that says that as of 2016, all capital equipment purchases will be exempt means that this process that you just described is for everyone, not just people, not just farmers or businesses that have 80 employees, etc. It's for everyone. Is that correct?
Senator Ortman.
Madam President and Senator Torres-Ray, that would be correct. By 2016, all capital equipment purchases in the state will be sales tax exempt. They are now. We will just be eliminating the rebate program for all businesses by 2016.
Thank you, Madam President.
Senator Torres-Ray.
So I want to make my statement now that Senator Orman has given a clear understanding of a good example, members, for why we shouldn't vote for this bill. When Senator Marty says that this is really only to help large businesses, this is a very good example. So with this bill, we are providing tax relief to business owners that contract today more than 80 people and make profit of more than $1 million a year. This is a very good example of what this bill is. So I don't know about you, but I don't have many business owners that employ more than 80 people in their business and make more than $1 million a year in profit. I don't have that. I have businesses that contract about 4 or 5 people that are struggling to make perhaps $100,000 to pay for their home and to pay to maintain their business. That, in my opinion, is what qualifies a small business to be a small business in the state of Minnesota. Not a person that hires more than 80 employees and makes more than $1 million a year. Now, I have to make sure that members do understand that I wish I had more people who make more than $1 million a year. I wish I had, and I have nothing against that. I have nothing against that. I just have a great number of people in my district who are struggling to make it right now, who do need support, and this particular bill is not providing that, and I wanted to make that clear to the members so that we understand the reason we're not supporting this bill today. Thank you.
Senator Ortman.
Well, and Senator Torres-Ray, I might agree with you, but I think that you're still misunderstanding. I'm sorry, Madam President. I think there's still a misunderstanding about what this provision does. All Minnesota businesses currently get the benefit of a sales tax exemption for their capital equipment purchases. This is a timing issue. Do they have to pay the sales tax at the time of the purchase or not? Right now, all Minnesota businesses must pay the sales tax at the time of purchase and get a rebate from the state of Minnesota later. That's all businesses. And so if this becomes effective, then our small businesses first will be able to get that sales tax at the time of purchase, and by 2016, all of them will. But this is just a timing issue. We're moving forward the tax relief that's already intended under Minnesota law that all Minnesota businesses can benefit from, whether they be small or large, all capital equipment purchases, Madam President.
Senator Dames.
Madam President, members, there are several parts of this bill that certainly help grow jobs or maintain the jobs we have. One of those portions in the bill is the small brewers tax credit. As you know, the small brewers tax credit stops once a brewery receives sells 100,000 gallons or 100,000 barrels of beer. This bill extends that to 250,000. That brings in about $115,000 to the brewers that come up to that level, and that affects a lot of our communities. There's a brewer in New Ulm, Minnesota. There's two in St. Paul. There's one in Cold Springs. There's one in Brooklyn Center, four in Minneapolis, and one in Stillwater, and one in Mankato. And these folks all have the opportunity to take advantage of that. And when we take a look at the amount of dollars that these small brewers are investing in their businesses on an annual basis, this is an opportunity for us to create jobs, and I thank Senator Ortman for keeping this provision in the bill. And this is a good bill, and I'd request your green vote.
Senator Daley.
Thank you, Madam President. Improving the environment for our private sector job creators is critical, and this bill takes steps to do just that. In addition, there are critical provisions included in this bill for taxpayers to more easily understand the spending increases by their local governments. This improvement in greater transparency will help to empower taxpayers and deserves to be law. Members, I encourage your support of this bill.
Senator Benson.
Thank you, Madam President. To the issue of angel investors, with everything that was going on in the Capitol today, you might not have noticed that Medtronic announced they were laying off employees. They were laying off employees because their cardiac rhythm management sales division were experiencing declining sales. If we want companies like Medtronic to be able to grow, they have to have new businesses, new ideas that they can buy up to expand their productivity and continue hiring. My brother happens to work for a small medical device company. They have worked for 6 years to go through the approval process. 6 years where angel investors and venture capitalists were pouring money into engineers and research and lawyers who fulfilled their compliance needs. And while they were waiting for FDA approval, they needed $650,000 a month to keep people employed. I do not think it is too much to give those people a little credit for the risk that they take. And that is what we're doing with the research and development tax credit and the angel investor tax credit, folks. This is Minnesota's future. This is our jobs going forward.
Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Madam President and members. I would just like to say a wholehearted thank you to Senator Ortman. I think this is an absolutely phenomenal bill. As I listen to the discussion on the floor today, I almost wonder if we're talking about the same bill. I hear some of the folks from the other side of the aisle saying this won't create jobs, and then I hear others saying that this will only benefit large businesses. So I really wonder if we're talking about the same bill. A couple of provisions that I'd like to talk about in this legislation, Section 11, Section 18, I think those point directly to our small business community, specifically Section 11, which is allowing for rehabilitation efforts on foreclosed properties. I can tell you firsthand that's going to create jobs in my area. If we're looking at, I live in Brooklyn Park, and we have worked hard to battle a unproportionately hit city as far as foreclosures go. Over the past 5 years, we've had about 20% of our housing stock go through foreclosure. We need to address that. What this is going to do is, this is going to put to work carpenters, bricklayers, concrete pourers, carpet layers, electricians. Members, this benefits small business people as well. This benefits our business community in total. And if we want to keep going down the road that we're on right now, a good road, a sound fiscal road, a road that has taken us from a $5 billion deficit to a $1.2 billion surplus, we need to keep these small business people working. This is a good bill, and I encourage a green vote.
Senator Bach.
Thank you, Madam President and members. And Senator Cruz, congratulations. Members, it's true. Senator Cruz has created the only job of this legislative session. You know, we all came here and said creating jobs was going to be our number one priority. Well, members, Senator Cruz actually created one. The school trust fund advisor that's going to advise the DNR in the school trust fund bill that was in the conference committee. So, members, we scored one. Senator Cruz, you get the benefit for that, and you did do very good work on that. But, members, in a session that was about jobs, I find it kind of interesting that people now are getting at the end of session here, and we're talking about this is the job bill. Members, over the next 15 years, the business tax cut in this bill, property tax cut, is going to cost $2.7 billion to the state's general fund. Now, why did I pick 15 years? I picked 15 years because, members, I know how hard it's going to be to pay back that school shift. Last year, we just happened to shift $2.7 billion away from schools. And why did I pick 15 years and happens to line up with $2.7 billion? It's because, members, the very first school shift that was done, and Senator Hoffman will appreciate this. She's not here because I see earlier she said she was going to get up and give us a little history lesson. She's been here 2 years, so I would value that. But, members, the very first school shift that was done, I believe, was done in 1983. It was $241 million, and it wasn't a school age shift like we did last year. It was the property tax recognition shift. So it changed the month that schools recognize the aid they receive from the state, the equalization aid they receive from the state for the property taxes they levy for schools. So we shifted the date of that, $241 million in 1983. It took us 15 years to pay back that $241 million to schools. 15 years. Now, if it's going to take 15 years to pay back what we borrowed last year, you know how much schools are going to get? Zero. Zero, because the first $2.7 billion over the next 15 years is going to go to buy down business property taxes. Because we're putting these business tax cuts ahead in line of paying back schools. Just happens to be the same number that we borrowed last year over the 15 years, which happens to also be how long it took us in 1983 when we did the very first school shift to pay back the schools. But, members, just let me tell you why I don't believe this is a jobs bill. I didn't have revenue tell me how much of business taxes are they're connected to retail sales, but it's a lot. It may be more than half of business property taxes are paid by retail establishments. Members, there are only so many retail sales in an economy. People are only going to spend the money that they have. And you cannot, and I stopped last night at my friend John Menard's, bought a couple little windows for my cabin. If we cut John Menard's property taxes, he's not going to create a job. There's still only, I stop there a couple times a week. I'm still going to stop a couple times a week. I'm not going to buy any more than I was buying before. Lowering his property taxes are not going to create a job. He's not going to hire anybody. The money is going to flow to the bottom line on the corporate spreadsheet in Wisconsin. Okay, how many of you stop at McDonald's restaurants? Okay, so we're going to cut the property taxes for the McDonald's restaurant chain. It's not going to make anybody else buy a Big Mac. They're not going to have any additional sales. And with no additional sales, how are they going to hire any additional employees? They won't need any new employees. And you can go down the list. Holiday Inn, right down here on the corner of West 7th and Kellogg. I mean, if we cut the property taxes on the Holiday Inn, that going to mean they're somehow going to hire more housekeepers to clean rooms? It's not going to put anybody more in their rooms. They need to sell more rooms if they're going to add any employees. There are so many dollars in a retail economy, members. And cutting property taxes for retail businesses, you think Walmart's going to hire anybody if we cut their property taxes? There's still only so many people going to walk in their store. But they will benefit on the corporate bottom line in Bentonville, Arkansas. And the shareholders and the Walton family are going to benefit. I'll give you that. But they're not going to hire more people. And Senator Gazelka said that businesses pay a higher class rate than homeowners. That's true. But Senator Gazelka, a little history lesson. Commercial industrial property pays a 2% class rate. Homes under 500,000 pay 1. Members, when I came here, the class rate for commercial industrial property, I believe, was 5.65%. Businesses paid 5 times more than homeowners. 5 times, not 2. And we've done very, very good work. Frankly, this DFL Senate has done very, very good work over my tenure in the legislature of reducing those business taxes. And members, I understand why you're trying to put forward a business tax cut, property tax cut bill. I get it. Because you absolutely snookered them last year. You absolutely took the business community to task. I mean, when you eliminated the homestead credit last year that homeowners got, and then you artificially reduced their market values, you took tax capacity out of the community. Communities were still going to levy the same number of dollars. Schools, cities, counties, they still needed the same amount of money, and you took a whole bunch of residential tax capacity out of the system. So when the levy got spread this year, business taxes skyrocketed. Agricultural taxes skyrocketed. Seasonal recreational taxes skyrocketed. All because you took the homestead credit away from homeowners and you shifted the property tax burden onto the other classes of property. You shifted it onto businesses and main streets. You shifted it onto agricultural property. You shifted it onto cabins. Frankly, I'm very surprised that the State Chamber of Commerce signed off on last year's tax bill. They should have been paying closer attention. And they weren't. And businesses were badly impacted by your elimination of the homestead credit last year. And members, another troubling thing in the bill is just the current numbers in the next biennium. And I've heard people talk about surpluses around here that we Republicans in control have taken the state to prosperity from deep deficits. And I cautioned you once before, be careful with the campaign rhetoric. And I see a lot of people getting up making little campaign speeches today. Mine's not. I don't know if it's going to be such an honor to come back here next year and have to clean up the mess. We still owe schools $2.4 billion. How you can in good conscience talk about surpluses when everybody in this room knows we owe our K-12 schools $2.4 billion. We owe them another almost $600 million in the property tax recognition shift. And that should be paid back, members, so that's available to future legislatures someday. So the deficit to schools is about $3 billion. We all know that the February forecast showed that the deficit in the next biennium in real dollars is about $1.1 billion. Plus inflation, the very nominal inflation at about 2% that MMB has built in to their forecast of another billion. So members, if you added up the $3 billion to schools that we owe, the 1.1 we know that's certain, the one that's inflation, you're north of $5 billion that the next legislature is going to have to wrestle with. Now, that assumes you're going to pay schools back. If you want to talk about surpluses, you really think you have them, then tell people the truth. The $3 billion that were taken from schools, 2.4 plus 600 for the recognition shift, that's a cut, schools, and you're not going to get it. And if you're willing to stand up and do that and say that you cut schools by $3 billion, then we can start to have a conversation about whether there's a surplus or not. But let's not think that Minnesotans are naive. They're pretty smart. They know what's happened to their schools, and they're going to know that you're putting $2.7 billion in the next 15 years ahead of them. Members, I would predict if this bill gets signed into law, you might as well just call that school shift a cut, because there is going to be no money to ever pay them back. So just tell them the truth. You know, they went out and borrowed over $600 million this year so they can pay the bills, because we haven't paid them what we say in law we owe them. Members, this bill makes, just in the short term, makes the deficit $145 million worse this time next year. That is what the next legislature is going to have to deal with. You're going to make it $145 million worse than what we're currently projecting the deficit's going to be. Now, many of you aren't going to be here. Maybe I won't be here. My endorsement convention's this weekend. Tell you what, if they don't endorse me, I'll make you a deal. I won't run in a primary. I'll send you all a letter announcing that I'm not going to run. But it is just not responsible to hand off to the next legislature. It's bad enough we're handing them off at a minimum a $1.1 billion problem and then start adding all the things from there. It's bad enough that we're handing them off that. We're not going to let the next group of freshmen that come into this chamber start with a clean slate. We're going to make sure they start in a hole. We're going to bury you in a hole, and we're going to make that hole $145 million more today. We're going to dig that hole even a little deeper for this next group of freshmen. And many of you remember when you came here a little over a year ago, how excited you were. First day on the job, excited about winning your election and the signs in your garage. Got some in mine with my name on it. Got some in my garage with my opponent's names on it. You know, your mom and dad get to see you on TV. Maybe grandma gets to see you on TV. That's all kind of exciting when you're brand new here. But
excuse me, Senator Bach. I'm having some people indicate that they're unable to hear. So members, please keep the level down. If you have conversations, take them outside.
Thank you, Madam President. Thank you, Senator Limmer, for bringing that to the President's attention. But members, I just mentioned that because I know those of you that are new remember how exciting it was to get here. And the next group of freshmen coming here next year, they're going to be excited too. But you're digging the hole even deeper for them today. You're making, who knows who's going to control the place. The only certainty about the next budget is that Governor Dayton is going to have to propose one to the legislature. He'll start working on that in the fall. And he's going to propose something in January to the next legislature. Don't make it $145 million worse than it is already. I mean, a green vote on this bill is just fiscally irresponsible. And it's not fair to the next group of freshmen that are going to be coming in here that feel so good about how hard they worked and are so proud, and they should be proud to win an election and become a member of the state Senate. But don't make their job any harder. Don't make it any harder. $145 million of additional deficit when you're already facing $1.1 billion plus inflation plus the school shift. It's just too much to have to manage. You're going to have to find another $145 in revenue or make another $145 in cuts. I mean, those are the only two options we have, unless you think you want to borrow more. You know, we borrowed tobacco bonds last year. We sold the revenue stream off the tobacco settlement over the next 20 years. We've already, not me, but you, passed it last year. I didn't vote for it. The next $1.2 billion over the next 20 years is going to go to pay back those tobacco bonds that you borrowed. So that's all been put ahead of paying back the schools also. Members, next year there's going to be significant tax reform done, because the state has a serious financial problem. And we're not helping that any by not being honest with Minnesotans about the challenges that our state faces. And to just pile on more debt like it doesn't matter, I don't believe that's what any of you came here to do. And it's not the responsible thing to do. And if you do it, Minnesotans are smarter than that. They're smarter than that, and they're going to know that you voted to raise the deficit by $145 million so that the Walton family could make a little bit more, and my friend John Menard can make a little more, and McDonald's Corporation, and go down the list of all these international companies that have businesses in Minnesota that are going to have a nice little benefit on the bottom line, and people that own shares of stock in there are going to make a little extra money. But don't kid yourself that it's going to create any jobs, members, because this bill doesn't do that. This just sets the state further in the hole. It's not responsible. I would urge a no vote.
Senator Zelka.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, I probably would have left it alone, but Senator Bach invoked my name, so I needed a comment. But I was one of those freshmen last year, coming into a time when the Republicans took control of the Senate for the first time in 38 years, left with a budget hole of $6 billion shortfall, virtually nothing in the cash reserves or budget reserves. And now when we finish, we'll have about $1 billion in the cash reserves and budget reserves. And if we work on controlling the spending, we will do just fine this next year. In 1983, Senator Bach mentioned that at that time it was 200-something million that they shifted for the first time, and it took them 15 years to pay that back. We had to go along with the shift with the governor to end the shutdown and paid back the $700 million, by the way, not the 2-point-something billion. That's a combination of all prior years of shift. But that which we incurred, we paid back almost half of it, and certainly were willing to pay back the rest in just 1 year. But the last thing I want to comment about is just a fundamental difference about what we think and how we think jobs are created. And when we want to try to work on helping the job creators, it's not just for the businesses that are here, though they should get some of these benefits for the ones that create the jobs. But what about all the other business owners and job creators that may want to come to Minnesota, but they look at our tax climate and we're 45th out of 50? I'm glad that we have the lakes. I'm glad that we have the resources in northeast Minnesota. I'm glad that we have agriculture. I'm glad that we have a good workforce. But we also have to be competitive on what it takes to make a profit for a business. That's the number one goal for a business, is to make a profit. And then they want to take care of helping the community and doing all the other things. But if they don't make a profit, they won't come here. And so when we look at issues to help the job creators, that's our way of recruiting new businesses as well as keeping the present businesses we have.
Senator Michelle. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam President. I can't resist, after listening to our concerns for government and how we're going to have enough money to spend. But I've just had a chance to visit a bit with a friend that's in a small business just down the road from here. Maybe it's your favorite restaurant, too. It's mine, My Village. One of the small businesses that provides the jobs and the services that we need. And I see a person that government's actions are putting out of business. Next week, they're facing a property tax bill for half. And I've got the 2010 numbers here. It's split up a little differently, but it didn't go down for them. But $52,026 for half of their property tax. $105,352 for that little corner business there in a restaurant. And you think, how in the world Can they pay that? Now, I know that one of the things that we've been trying to do is put a hold on this statewide property tax. $26,638 is going to that statewide property tax of their yearly property tax. And tax increment financing. Now, I don't know what that covers. That probably covers a multitude of sins. But it's $47,391. And the fiscal disparities is $24,085. How in the world can they stay in business? And that's something they're facing next week. If we don't start trying to do something now for the people who are the ones that are providing the resources for government, instead of thinking just about government first. Not only that, you go up there now and they've got a pit in front of their door. 40% of their business has been lost with the construction of the Central Corridor. We didn't help much last year when we shut down government for several weeks either. So, you know, it's a wonder that they, when they look back, coming here from Vietnam, all they went through in that war-torn country and finding their way here for liberty and justice, putting forth an effort to build a restaurant that would help people understand the culture of their land. And they've done a beautiful job of it. And then you get a tax statement like this. It makes you wonder what they think of our land and of our state. We need the relief for small businesses. They're the ones that are the lifeblood for our state, keeping their families together, keeping their families' members employed in this case, as well as others, and giving us an opportunity to have a great meal and a great experience. I just urge you to think about that while you're voting on this bill. Yes, we do need reform, but if that reform just means we're going to try to figure out next year, I won't be here to deal with that, of how to extract even more from people rather than helping them to do what they're doing, which is keeping our economy alive and growing and helping them to be self-sufficient and supporting their families. I don't want to be here for any of those kinds of efforts. But I'd certainly like to see us start down that path of giving relief to our small businesses and keeping that the focus rather than just how are we going to grow more money for government.
Senator Michelle? Senator Ortman?
Thank you, Madam President. I believe a few facts would be in order. First of all, I heard that property taxes went up last year an extraordinary amount because of the market value homestead credit. Well, let's just listen to the facts. The county levies 0.4%, cities 0.9%, townships 3.3%, schools 1.8%, special taxing 0.5%, none of which were under the control of the legislature, I might add. Overall, state levy increase was just 1.2% or $96 million. The increase for final property taxes went up 4.7% statewide, $370 million. That's the cumulative for all that I just mentioned, 4.7%. But the statewide average for 10 years, 6.26%. And in pay 2008, the last year we funded fully LGA, county program aid, and the market value homestead credit, guess what? That year, property taxes went up across the state of Minnesota by 7.8%. Now, I wouldn't say it was ideal, but we've done a really good job of holding down property taxes. And for those in this chamber that are really concerned about that, the property tax refund program is available now for anybody who had a spike in their property tax increase, in an increase. So we've answered that, members, and that's another reason why, if people are complaining about that, they should be voting yes on this bill. Number two, this bill would include $51 million in property tax relief, as I said, in 2012 and 2013. So it provides that urgently needed relief up front. But the governor agreed with that number. He agreed that we should be looking at that $106 million that we have from our April economic update that shows that we are $106 million ahead in our projected forecast for November. He also agreed that we could use some of the UCARE money and some of the Department of Revenue money. So we're talking about perhaps as much as $27 million from the reserves. But again, that's drawn against $106 million where we are ahead in our forecast. And he was in agreement to that, members. And when we talked, he said we should minimize the tails. And so, members, that's exactly what we did. Our original offer had $190 million in tails. We brought that back down to $140 million in tails. That's the increase for 2014-15. But let me ask you a rhetorical question. Is there any way you can make permanent tax relief or policy changes without them continuing for more than 1 year? How is any business going to believe that there's any consistency in our tax policy if the promise of change is only open for 1 year? You got 1 year to take advantage of this program, and if you don't, you lose out, and by the way, it's gone next year. Do you think you're going to be a big investor in the state of Minnesota relying on those tax policy changes if the commitment is only for 1 year? Members, we have to compete nationally for new businesses. And if we hold that promise out for 1 year, there isn't one accountant that is going to advise a new business from outside of the state of Minnesota to rely on that empty promise. We need to provide relief. It's going to have some tails in order for it to have some success in generating new business and competing for new business nationally. And let me just mention a response to the government expansion math that I heard. I call it government expansion math. I don't know how. I have tried to figure out how somebody says that if we freeze the state general levy, somehow the state's going to come up with a shortfall of $2.2 billion. Maybe 2.7. I can't even remember how much they're exaggerating that number to at this point. But the facts are important here. If we freeze the state general levy at $817 million, by 2022, the impact will be a total, or the total taxes will be, would be $1.026 billion, or $200 million in difference. It's only if you add it all up cumulatively that you get any kind of crazy number in the $2 billions. So let's talk about facts when we vote on this bill. Members, I've said Minnesotans have asked for your help. They've asked in a sense of urgency because of the economic recession. They are struggling. Minnesota families and Minnesota businesses are struggling. And we not only need to help them, we need to set up a plan to encourage growth and encourage new businesses to the state of Minnesota. So, members, I urge you to vote yes. But if you do think that you should vote no, and there are no maybes, we all know that, then you are voting against a program to hire veterans. You are voting against homeowner property tax relief for those that are struggling with property taxes. You are voting against small business owners across the entire state that are either making money or losing it. They're C corporations, S corporations, individuals. They're the gas station owners, the tavern owners. They're the dry cleaners, the coffee shop owners, the startup software companies. They're the big companies. They're the hardware stores. They all pay those state general levy property taxes, and they've grown significantly. If you vote no, you're voting against tens of thousands of new jobs for the state of Minnesota. You're voting against economic development projects in 39 cities.
You're voting against tax credits that will make Minnesota more competitive nationally and will draw new businesses here. Members, I ask you, are you helping or are you ignoring all of those Minnesotans that have asked us for help here in St. Paul? I sure hope you vote to help and provide some relief that Minnesotans are counting on us to provide.
Secretary will give House File 2337 its third reading.
House File Number 2337, a bill for an act relating to the financing of state and local government, third reading.
Pursuant to Rule 12.5, Senator Gerlach moved that the following members be excused for a conference committee on Senate File 230 at 4 p.m., Senators Gerlach, Hoffman, and Nelson. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Secretary will take the roll on House File 2337. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 41 ayes and 25 nays, the bill is passed in its title agreed to. Remaining under motions and resolutions, we will take up messages from the House. The secretary will read the message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce that the House refuses to concur in the Senate amendments to House File Number 2685, a bill for an act relating to transportation. The House respectfully requests that the Conference Committee of three members be appointed thereon. Beard, Benson, M., and Nelson have been appointed to such committee on the part of the House. House File Number 2685 is herewith transmitted to the Senate with the request that the Senate appoint a like committee. Albert A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
Senator Gimsey.
Madam President, I move that the Senate accede to the request of the House for a conference committee on House File 2685 and that a conference committee of three members be appointed by the Subcommittee on Conference Committees on the part of the Senate to act with a like conference committee appointed on the part of the House.
On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Remaining under motions and resolutions, Senator Senjum. Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Madam President. I move that Senate File 1694 and the veto message thereon be taken from the table.
On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Madam President, members. I'm trying to do this one-handed, kind of. I now move that Senate File 1694... be now reconsidered and repassed, the objection of the governor notwithstanding, pursuant to Article 4, Section 25 of the Constitution of the State of Minnesota.
To that motion, Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Madam President, and members. Members, this is the fireworks bill. And members,
I think it's fitting that I move to reconsider this veto message. This is an item that I've gotten more emails on than anything else since I've been here these past 10 years. People that don't want a prohibition anymore in the state of Minnesota on fireworks. Contrary to the governor's letter, the veto letter, the Association of Minnesota Counties right away sent me a letter stating they did not oppose the bill, that they were neutral on the bill, that we actually did sit down and consider their needs, and we put those in the bill. And so that made us think, and as we were talking to other organizations, we didn't have time to put together letters yet, but other organizations were saying that they don't remember being against the bill, but they would have to go back to their organizations and find out where they actually stood, whether it was neutral or against the bill. And members, even moving further, there was so much false information put out on this that would make people think that fireworks cause more damage than they actually do in the state of Minnesota. And we've had all those statistics, and we did put them to the governor's office, and we were saddened that the actual statistical data was not considered.
Excuse me, Senator Jungbauer. Members, it's getting loud. Please keep your conversations quiet or take them outside. Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, and to start again, members, to understand that fireworks are illegal, the kind of fireworks we're trying to make legal in Minnesota are illegal today, and yet the governor even talked about that even though they're illegal, nobody's enforcing them, and so we should just keep on doing what we're doing today. I found that to be troubling. To want to physically keep sending $6 million in tax dollars out, and that's what were KSTP's numbers were when they ran the numbers on sales tax alone, $6 million. It's a jobs bill. The industry is telling us a minimum of 12 to 1,700 year-round jobs, even in this five-week period of actual sales, it would create year-round jobs. So to Senator Bach saying that that my seatmate here, Senator Cruz, was the only one that was that actually created a job, I've tried to create a lot of jobs with a very simple bill that removes a prohibition in Minnesota. Members, of the 14,561 fires in Minnesota in 2010, just 45 were caused by fireworks. That's 0.3%. That's right out of the state fire marshal's report. And members, that kind of information, other states have put together what they thought was pretty sound evidence that suggested the reason some of these fires even keep going is because when something's illegal, people tend to run from the scene rather than put the fire out or call somebody to make sure the fire doesn't get out of hand. 16% of the injuries from fireworks are caused by public displays. So when people are getting hurt by the fireworks, 16% of these injuries are caused from public displays and illegal firecrackers, which aren't affected by this bill. So members are getting hurt by things that this bill has nothing to do with. 22% of injuries from fireworks are caused by fountains, sparklers, and novelties, which are already legal in Minnesota. 22%. And members, the kids that are getting the most damage are actually getting hurt from sparklers, which are already legal in the state of Minnesota. The highest rate of injuries of children in fireworks are caused by sparklers. So Senate File 1694 is a jobs bill. It does actually saves Minnesotans gas money from having to drive to North Dakota, South Dakota, Wisconsin. For those of my friends that believe in such things as global warming, I think then Senate File 1694 could say we're trying to deal with global warming and stop that by using less fuel. If you think about it another way, that $6 million would be about 40% of the debt service on the projected 2014 debt service on a Minnesota Viking stadium. So the fireworks bill could be used to bring some of that money to the state of Minnesota and go towards a Viking stadium. The bill also passed 48-17 here in the Senate, members. That's a wide bipartisan support. And I know my DFL friends don't want to go against their governor. I understand that. But this is what the citizens of Minnesota want. They don't want to be running illegal. And, you know, though chiefs of police and fire chiefs may say that they're against it, when I talk to the rank and file, even at the Capitol here, members, they're telling me, go ahead, Senator,
We're so sad and sorry, and it's about time. We don't want to look the other way when our neighbors and friends are shooting off fireworks. We want them to be legal. So though the upper muckety-mucks, as you might say, might be against the bill, the rank and file are certainly in favor of decriminalizing their friends and neighbors. You know, the National Fire Protection Association actually reported no deaths from fireworks fires between 1999 and 2009. So though people would come and tell you that fireworks are causing deaths and the fires are causing deaths, we can't find the statistics to back up what they're saying. It's interesting, the NFPA that we actually use for the code that we're trying to adopt in the fireworks bill for safety of displays and sale of fireworks actually also has codes on Christmas trees and Christmas tree displays, and we have no fires that cause any damage in fireworks, but certainly Christmas trees actually reported 13 deaths between 2005 and 2009. So, again, members, as I compare it to other things, we certainly then should outlaw Christmas trees because they seem to be exponentially more dangerous than fireworks. Finally, as we're looking at other fire statistics, the U.S. Fire Administration reported about 4,300 Thanksgiving Day fires between 2006 and 2008, resulting in 10 deaths and 50 injuries. And of those fires, 69% were caused by cooking. So when we're talking about injuries and we're talking about deaths, we again must have to go to Thanksgiving and outlaw our Thanksgiving cooking because it's exponentially greater than the damage caused by fireworks. So members, I think the bill was a good bill. We put in everything so that cities and counties could put the local protections in at the local levels they felt were necessary. We know that the fire marshals have authority in high fire hazard times to actually restrict the use of fireworks at those times if they're legal. You can't restrict anything that's not legal, and so I believe, as many do, that we'd actually make this fireworks displays that our friends and neighbors are using all the time in the state of Minnesota, we believe they would be exponentially safer if this bill were to pass. And so, friends, I hope you can support this bill and support a veto override. Thank you.
Further discussion, Senator Harrington.
Madam President, I rise to oppose this. We've had this discussion, and I think, unfortunately, the author of this bill keeps reaching for specious information. He keeps saying that because something is difficult to enforce, we shouldn't have laws against it. Well, the rules against murder are difficult to enforce. The rules against drunk driving are difficult to enforce. The rules about narcotics trafficking are difficult to enforce. I'm not sure if this body wants to then join a chorus that says, because things are harmful to our communities and are difficult to enforce, that we shouldn't have laws against them. I can tell you that it is very difficult to enforce fireworks laws. When I was chief of police, despite what the good senator would say, I oftentimes had to assign extra cars because we would have 60 to 100 calls about fireworks per night during the period that he's talking about. These were members of the community who could not sleep, who could not drive down the street, who did not feel safe. Should those 60 to 100 calls have gone unanswered? No. Did it take additional resources from the police department? Yes. Did it take additional resources from the fire department? Yes. Did it take additional resources from ambulance companies and paramedics? Yes. Quite obviously, Senator Jungbauer wants to reach into Never Never Land for his examples as to why his fireworks bill should be passed as an override. He wants to suggest that we should cancel Christmas and cancel Thanksgiving because those are hazards. But those are hazards that I think he would have to admit are not unreasonable hazards. I've listened to Senator Jungbauer in committee oftentimes wax eloquent about his knowledge about plumbing and about science and about why we didn't need certain prevention matters because they would be more expensive or because they would be more difficult to employ. This is no different than that. The experts have really spoken very clearly about this. Law enforcement, those individuals, chiefs of police, sheriffs, and others who are responsible for public safety and keeping the peace have said this is bad law. Fire departments, those who are responsible for the safety of us when we are injured or when our houses are on fire have said this is bad law. The emergency rooms at almost every major medical facility that I'm aware of, those places where we have to bag and drag those individuals who've blown up their hands, set fire to their clothing, injured children and otherwise because of fireworks, have said this is bad law. They've said they've seen the injuries. They've seen the damage. They said they've seen the fires. I'm not sure what more data he wants. How many numbers are there, I guess, before he will say, yes, one injury is too many injuries. One death from this is too many deaths. One neighbor who can't sleep may well be too many neighbors who say, this is bad law, and the Minnesota Senate should not pass it and should not override it.
Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Madam President, to my esteemed Senator Harrington. Apparently, you are not hearing what I'm saying. Is statistics are statistics. You can't change the facts. It's exponentially safer than many other things we do. People are already doing it. And over 45 senators agreed with me last time that this was a good law. And certain people certainly should maybe not be having fireworks. I could argue that perhaps a person that is prone to accidents like myself ought not to be around fireworks. But they're already in existence. We're already giving our friends and neighbors in surrounding states the money. They're here lobbying to make sure that we continue to give them the money. If it was something that wasn't already going on, you'd have an argument, but you're comparing apples to oranges, and it just is a ludicrous argument.
Further discussion of Senator Jungbauer's motion. Senator Jungbauer renews his motion that Senate File 1694 be now reconsidered and repassed the objections of the governor, notwithstanding pursuant to Article 4, Section 23 of the Constitution of the State of Minnesota, the Secretary will... And I thought maybe that it would be helpful to explain a yes would be to override and reconsider... and repass, excuse me, and a no would be to sustain the governor's veto. The secretary will take the roll on the Jungbauer motion. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. The motion failing to reach its necessary two-thirds of 45, having 37 ayes and 29 nays, the motion is not adopted. Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Madam President. With respect to the Senate bonding bill, it was decided for session that the file that we were going to be using as a carrier was perhaps not the right file. So the House is taking up the bonding bill to tonight, and we'll be sending it over. So we'll want to recess to receive that report. We'll probably take that bill up on Monday then. It's hard to know exactly how long that would be. I'm not aware of at least what the status in the House is, but let us recess rather to the call of the chair. In addition to that, the Rules Committee would meet immediately after this recess, and we will then again reconvene upon the reception of the report from the House on their bonding committee. I'm not sure that how long that takes, Madam Chair. If it's perhaps, and you can nod at me, if it's about an hour after completion of the bill.
Senator Senjum, they're indicating a half an hour.
Okay. Then, Madam Chair, we'll
just a moment. They're changing their mind.
Yes. Pardon?
They're going to see if engrossing may take a bit. So just...
Madam President.
Senator Bonoff.
Madam President, would Senator Senjum yield for a question?
Senator Senjum will yield.
Madam
Senator
President,
Bonoff.
I would yield.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Senjum, will there be any other business taken up this evening? Are you looking for just a skeleton crew to process the paperwork, or were you asking members to stay?
No.
Senator Senjum.
Senator Bonhoff, it would be for purposes of receiving the report and otherwise processing or otherwise, you know, meeting, processing the paperwork. So there would be no intention to take up any further business other than, again, the technical aspects of processing. As we're waiting, I could announce the Rules Committee will meet in 107 immediately after. And I would also add the Republican Caucus will meet in room 318 upon conclusion of the Rules Committee.
Senator Senjum, we have confirmation that a half an hour would be sufficient time.
Madam President, I would then recess or move that we recess until 1/2 hour after the conclusion of the House consideration of the Capital Investment Committee bill.
Senator Senjum moves we recess to the call of the President. Senator Higgins.
Madam President and Senator Senjum, can you tell us now whether we'll be here tomorrow?
Senator Senjum.
Madam President, Senator Higgins, no plans on meeting tomorrow. And let me just correct another statement that I made with respect to our taking up the capital investment bill. Apparently, it needs a second reading on Monday, and we would take it up on Tuesday.
Senator Olson.
Are you talking to me?
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam President. And if anybody is going to hang around, there's a real good restaurant down on the corner of Western and university that would probably like some business. And if you take the frontage road down to Western and go up that way, you won't get caught in the mess that's on University Avenue.
Madam President, for those who may not come back after or for, upon the recess or on the reconvening of the Senate, we would move then to, or we will move at that point upon adjournment today to come back at 1 o'clock. Noon on Monday. So you can plan on that. That will be formally offered as a motion, of course, at the end of the session today.
Senator Senjum renews his motion that we recess until to the call of the president, approximately half an hour after the House passes the bonding bill. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. We are in recess.
Senate will come to order.
Madam President, is there a privileged report at the desk?
Senator Senjum, could you describe that report? The Secretary will read the report.
Senator Senjum from the Subcommittee on Conference Committee recommends that the following senators be, and they hereby are appointed as a conference committee on House File Number 2685, Senators Gimsey, Dibble, and Howe. Senator Senjum moves that the foregoing appointments be approved.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Remaining under motions and resolutions, we revert to messages from the House. The Secretary will read the message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate file. Herewith returned Senate file 1808, a bill for an act relating to retirement. Albany Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
There's no Senate action necessary on that message. The Secretary will read the next message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce that the House has acceded to the request of the Senate for appointment of a conference committee consisting of three members of the House on the amendments adopted by the House of the following Senate file. Senate file 1755, a bill for an act relating to state government. There has been appointed as such committee on the part of the House Drazkowski, Benson M., and Nelson. Senate file 1755 is herewith returned to the Senate. Albany Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
There's no Senate action necessary on that message. Secretary will read the next message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce that the House has adopted the recommendation report of the Conference Committee on Senate File 508 and repassed said bill in accordance with the report of the committee so adopted. Senate File 506, a bill for an act relating to courts. Senate File 506 is herewith returned to the Senate. Albany Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
There's no Senate action necessary on that message.
I have one more.
Secretary will read the next message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce that the House has adopted the recommendation report of the Conference Committee on Senate File 1717 and repassed said bill in accordance with the report of the committee. So adopted, Senate File 1717, a bill for an act relating to labor and industry. Senate File 1717 is herewith returned to the Senate. Albany Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
There's no Senate action necessary on that message. Moving to reports of committee, the Secretary will read the report.
Senator Senjum from the Committee on Rules and Administration, to which was referred under Joint Rule 2.03 together with the committee report thereon, Senate File 322, a bill for an act relating to family law, reports the same back with a recommendation that Joint Rule 2.03 be suspended for all further proceedings on House File 322 and the report from the Committee on Judiciary and Public Safety shown in the Journal for May 3, 2012, be adopted, and that the committee recommendation being the bill be amended, and when so amended, the bill be referred to the Committee on Finance without recommendation.
Senator Senjum.
Madam President, I move the committee adopts be committee reports be adopted.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Moving to announcements of Senate interest, I have excuses for the day. One excuse without objection. The following member will be excused. Senator Reinhart, all day. Without objection, he is excused. Further announcements of Senate interest. Senator Senjum.
Madam President, I do now move that the Senate do adjourn until Monday, May 7th at 1 p.m.
Senator Senjum has moved the Senate adjourn until Monday, May 7th at 1 p.m. All in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. We are adjourned.